You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman, and joining me on the other line, they used to call him Super Duper Tone, and now call him Tony East or T-East NBA, is Tony East. How are you doing, Tony?
There is no evidence that my Twitter name used to be Super Duper Tone.
I only knew that your Twitter name for like a month, and you changed it like a snap of a finger.
I am removing that from the record. That never happened.
So for today's show, we are doing an unusual one together on this, well, recording on Thursday, but it'll be a Friday show because we wanted to do a quarter season breakdown. We're 25 games in, which is a little past quarters, but the 20 game mark. But we wanted to do a quarter season breakdown, and then we wanted to preview the Nuggets and Cavs game come up this weekend because those are two pretty important games for the Pacers. So before we get into like, we have a kind of a series of questions. Was there anything you want to hit on the quarter season that you think it just needs to be talked about before we get to our questions?
I was going to have one question for you that wasn't on our sheet.
Go ahead.
All right. What player on the team has played the most above your expectations so far this year?
Oh, that is a good one. The obvious answer is right. Is Victor Oladipo, but I don't know. I probably have to be Sabonis, to be honest.
Yeah, right? that would have been my answer.
Just because I had no expectation for him. Like, Oladipo, I had, like, outside chance. He played like how he's playing right now, where he puts up 20-plus points a game. But Sabonis, obviously, was like a throw-in, I always thought. Like, oh, he'll play off the bench, and maybe he'll show something. But he's pretty good.
The only guys I had in consideration were Oladipo, and I didn't pick him because, like you said, we had the talks of maybe he'll be a 20-point scorer, and he has exceeded that, but not by so much that it's like, okay, he's exceeded the most. And then my guy that wasn't Sabonis in there was Darren Collison. You know, he's been passing a lot better than he has been in any other season, and his shot's still falling at the rates it usually does, and he looks like a leader. But hilariously, the Bulls game dissuaded me to also would have said Sabonis to that question. So good answer.
Yeah, Sabonis has been great. Like a double-double every night. He struggled the past week or so, but he's, I mean, just because when you hit it, where like Sabonis, you had no expectation he could do this, versus Victor Oladipo, you had like, if you were to like take a 100, like out of 100%, there was like a 10% chance that he was going to put up what he's putting up now. Like there was a small chance you thought he could do it, but Collison's also a decent one because Collison's playing pretty well. He's 12.6 assists a game, which is pretty impressive. He's basically like kind of guided the offense. You know, he did against the Bulls, but basically guided this team where they are right now.
Yeah, definitely. It's been the passing more so than anything. And just because he's never been this before, I think he has like 1.5 more assists per game than he's ever had in a season before so far. And, you know, he's just leading that first unit so well. That's part of the reason they're so good in first quarters compared to other quarters has been his play. And I just kind of expected him to be like a floor spacer for Oladipo and Turner to do their thing. So the fact that he's been able to not only be involved but be very effective was the reason he would have been in there for me.
Yeah, and he's just a calm presence on the floor, which he comes in and takes control of the game. He isn't a high turnover player. It's just he helps sort of – this team can be a wreck at times pushing the pace, but when he has the ball in his hands, you always feel confident that they're going to make a good play usually. Usually they don't make dumb plays. You know, sometimes a lot of people will throw the ball a little ahead of himself like that, but when the ball's in Collison's hands, you're like, all right, they'll figure out how to get an offense set, get something up and actually run a play.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they closed with Joseph against the Bulls. But, you know, Collison could have done just as well. It's just they wanted Joseph's defense. So I've been very pleased with a lot of guys. So I think most people have played above their expectations for me. But I just wanted to see what your answer was to that question.
Yeah, we talked about that, how basically every player on this team except for maybe Turner has played above what we thought they would play at the beginning of the season. But let's get to our questions to start. So
that's kind of like the first question we have, I guess.
Yeah, so the first question I had for our five kind of questions was the biggest surprise. It could be player, it could be storyline, whatever it is, the biggest surprise, and I was doing non-Victor Oladipo because we'll talk about him later.
Yeah, mine is the pace. Definitely the pace of the team. You know, you wrote about it this week, so it's easy to talk about, but last year they were 18th in pace. They would never shoot off of first actions. They didn't rebound enough to really push in transition, so the fact that this year they have been able to, you know, get their actions, getting guys open shows A, that, you know, Turner's come a long way as a screener, and so has Sabonis in those games he started, and B, you know, they've got guys who are quick enough to get to the rim on the catch on the first action, and they can rebound and push in transition to well, I guess they've been bad at rebounding, but you know, when they do get rebounds, they really push in transition. You know, that's been the biggest surprising thing to me is this is the stylistic change of the roster.
Yeah, they're the 10th fastest team in the league. They're 0.01 behind the Hornets, so maybe they're 9th. But they've been hovering around that top 10 all season, which has been really impressive. And it, their defense hasn't been just terrible. You know, it's number 19 in defensive rating right now, which isn't terrible. You know, there was one year where they were, I think, close to 10th last year under Vogel, but they were like 25th in D. So they've at least been able to kind of be competent on D and sometimes, but they score enough to make up for the fact they aren't a great defensive team.
Exactly. I guess the other thing that I would have chosen was three-point shooting, even though they were so good at it last year. I did not expect them to be on nearly 40% shooting team this year, but the fact that they have shown before that they are good at nailing the open shot means I was not going to pick that. I was going to go with the pace because that has been far and away the most surprising thing to me is how much they've been running.
Yeah, yours kind of leads into mine, and mine has just been the chemistry, how there has been no chemistry issues with this team basically through the first 25 games, which is just, I'm just surprised. First of all, after watching last season where there was too much, there were chemistry issues throughout the entire season. The Pacers brought in a new point guard and brought in Thad Young, but they bring in like three new starters, five new players in the rotation if you count Stevenson, who played only six games last year. And somehow this team is playing with a rhythm that just like seems like they played together forever. Like when they're running their fast breaks, when they're pushing the ball, they know to find Bogdanovic out there. I mean, it's been awesome to see this team. Like, they're, you know, Oladipo closes games, but it's everybody shoots, whoever's hot keeps shooting kind of thing. And it's kind of awesome to watch.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that they've been hitting pull-up threes, like, in general, the chemistry has been so good with literally every lineup. And the fact that in their eight-man rotation, that it's really hard to find a combination of guys that doesn't work together is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, a perfect example of just the chemistry and their pull-up shooting is the fact that Stevenson had that one really good Raptors game where they just decided, you're hot, you just keep shooting, and nobody seemed to care. Or yesterday's game, or yeah, 2 days ago's game against the Bulls, where Collison didn't play the fourth quarter, and there's a picture of Collison where he's, like, laughing. He's happy. Like, these guys don't care if they play the entire game. They don't care about their minutes that much. They just want to win, and it's really fun to watch because last year's team just didn't have this, and it looked like last year was like pulling teeth out for these guys to play together. And this year, it's like they all want to be there. They all want to win as many games as possible. They all really care, and they're all, you know, they just – it's like they ride the hot hand. Like Bogdanovic will get hot in a game, and they'll just keep feeding the ball and keep telling him to shoot, and it's really cool to watch.
Yeah, for sure. I like the chemistry answer. I kind of wish I thought of it, but I'll stick with my guns.
Yeah, all right. So the next question for the quarter review is, what's one prediction you got right before the season?
I feel like we need to do both sides of this answer, right? So then we got
that's
right,
fine.
We got wrong.
That's fine. We can do that. Give me your right first.
You know what I'm going to say, don't you?
I do know what you're going to say, but I want you to say it for everybody else.
That Bojan's going to be awesome and he's going to be huge for the team. I know that like everyone who with a computer knew that his 3-point shooting and spacing was going to be so helpful, but he's been okay on defense. Not okay. He's been better than he was ever before on defense. And his off the dribble game getting to the rim has been awesome. And he's even been able to play back up four, set some screens. He's been so huge for the offense. That's why his offensive rating is 119. He has been awesome. And I am so glad that he's been good because that's one of the things I predicted.
Yes, yeah, Sabonis has been probably my favorite player to watch right now. I mean, he's just been so surprising on this Pacer team because he's been so good at getting to the rim and scoring in the lane. He hit one of the shots against the Bulls where he banked it off the rim, and it was a really difficult shot that he seems to hit all the time. He's by far definitely like when he's hot, it's fun to watch because you just know he'll make like every three when he's feeling it. And I really like him this year. I was surprised that he was able to do this. I thought at the beginning of the year that this will be my wrong that I thought Robinson would take him over in the starting lineup. But I think no matter when Robinson returns, Bogdanovic has clearly distinguished himself as a starting small forward.
Oh, for sure. Undoubtedly. Undubitably.
So then I can tell you my prediction I got right. So you're going to think maybe I didn't get it right, but I'm going to say Lance. I said Lance Stevenson might have a good season, and he's actually having a good season at this point, in my opinion.
Okay.
So I'm going to read
it. He's having a good season compared to what I expected of him. I'll give you that.
So in his last 14 games, Stevenson is averaging 10 points a game, 6 rebounds a game, 3 assists a game on like 43% three-point shooting. Yes, his first 10 games were kind of garbage. I'm not going to defend that. But he's turned the corner here. Ever since that New Orleans game where he had that awesome first half, he has just turned the corner and he hasn't regressed yet. You know, at times he looks uninsured on D and makes mistakes. Like I can pick out multiple games where he screws up on D because he doesn't follow his defender. But overall, he's kind of come to, you know, at times he plays like the 2013 Lance, and recently he hasn't fallen into like 2015 Lance with the Hornets. So he's been, I think I got that right. He had a pretty good year so far.
Yeah, you could kind of count that as my wrong if you want. I thought Lance would be awful. And at first I was doing well, but now I'm not doing as well.
You probably got more things wrong, so.
Sabonis is something I got horribly wrong.
But with Lance, the thing is that you can point to like two or three games. He's won the game for them. The Detroit game, he won basically for them. And that Toronto game, he won for them. So that's like, no matter what happens, getting two positive like fourth quarter wins out of a bench player is pretty impressive. So that's why I think I was right about him before the season. I was wrong for 10 games, but now he's turned the corner.
I was wrong about everything with Sabonis. I thought he would be playing the backup four alongside Al Jefferson on the bench. And I thought he was going to be like stretching the floor and hopefully getting a little better from deep and, you know, maybe passing into the post and playing some good D in space. And he has literally played the opposite role of that and done a damn good job of it. So I will concede that Sabonis is both awesome and playing the perfect role for the kind of player he is.
Yeah, that was a Caitlin thing when she
Caitlin nailed that one.
Yeah, she nailed that one at the end of the year. But I mean, I think with Sabonis, give you some credit, is that like you could not predict that he would end up starting seven games at center because Turner got hurt and play just the way he did. I mean, like he just hadn't played that way ever. I mean, he had had like a somewhat nice little run with the Thunder last year for like 30 games or so, but those first eight games, whatever, he was just playing out of his mind. It seemed like he was. I don't think you could have predicted that. I think nobody predicted that, and that's what's been awesome about him this year.
Remember when he was like 26 of 26 and their three wins to start the year?
Yeah, remember they couldn't win a game without him shooting perfect from the field.
Good times. What a season it's been.
Yeah. So I said mine, Bogdanović. I was wrong on Bogdanović. I'm trying to think what else I was probably wrong on. I'm probably gonna be wrong on Thad Young getting traded. I don't think Thad Young's gonna get traded at the trade deadline now.
I don't either.
He is the rock of this team. He's the team captain. He's the guy that just seems like he's like probably the most veteran presence in the locker room besides outside of Collison and some of the, you know, Wilkins down the bench, but like of a rotation guy, he's one of those leaders of the team. And I think, you know, if this team wants to make the playoffs, they cannot trade him. So I think he's will be on this roster, and he's been pretty good this year. I mean, he struggled sometimes and get frustrated with him sometimes when like in the Bulls game, he took a couple really awful shots that I just was like somebody besides Thad shoot because he wasn't making anything. But you know, when he's on and he's kind of gets in the lane with the right positioning, he's got a really nice little floater within like 8 feet of the hoop sometimes, and he can go both hands. So I liked him this year.
Me too. Me too. And I'm glad I predicted that. So that was a good one for me. I'm glad our things were opposites there, kind of. I think we both were wrong on how many shots Miles Turner would get, but I'm glad neither of us chose that.
Yeah, and we were probably both wrong on Nate McMillan too.
Yes, I was very wrong on Nate McMillan. That goes hand in hand with my pace thing from earlier.
Yes, it does. I agree with that. All right, so then let's move on to our third question. We've been gushing about the Pacers now, so let's now a little snap back to reality. What's one thing you've noticed this year that they need to improve on?
I kind of teased it already, but rebounding. Oh my goodness. Especially in that Bulls game, like Lance was getting rocked on the glass by Bobby Portis. Robin Lopez had three easy offensive rebounds. They didn't box out anyone on a lot of these long misses. They're 15th in rebounding, but the fact that they play two bigs almost all the time, very rarely do they do one big, shows how bad that is. And, you know, I want to see better from them on the glass. And then another thing I want to see from them is keep taking the turnovers down a little bit. Per game, they're averaging 14 turnovers, which is about league average. But, you know, given that they do have some caretaker veterans, I would like to see that number drop a little bit.
All right. The rebounding battle, you probably don't have the stats in front of you, but I'm pretty sure every game they've won the rebounding battle. And I'm pretty sure every game they've lost their rebounding battle.
There was one, I think it was the Raptors. The home win against the Raptors was the only game that they lost the rebounding battle and won the game, and they lost the rebounding battle by one rebound.
They only won it because Lance Stephenson got hot for
Yeah.
But the rebounding, Lopez, you probably talked about this on your podcast yesterday. But Lopez, from the first game they played against him to last game, got totally different player. The first Bulls game, he like looked like he didn't even like belong on the court, and then yesterday on Wednesday he looked pretty good. So I was kind of surprised to think about that game.
Well, and I want to talk about that because I thought he had so many more rebounds. He only finished the game with five, but they were all like massive rebounds. Like the Pacers were on a huge run, and then Robin Lopez somehow got a clutch offensive rebound and then they would score to end the run. And like, he just felt like he had so many more because they were just such impactful plays.
So for my improvement, I've got two in my mind I'm thinking of right now. One is the fan base to show up for games, but that's an improvement for the team. That doesn't really make sense. We'll delve into that topic. I don't want to get to it now because I think it's kind of a stupid. I think it was blown out of proportion, to be honest, and I think people are just like trying to hate on it. But we'll talk about that on Sunday. My actual one is they need to get a ninth guy in the rotation. Hopefully, Robinson will be back soon. But this 8-man rotation thing, while it's been good, I think it's not sustainable. It's the one thing that's like is their weak spot where. If right now guys are not touching more than 33 minutes a game with Oladipo, but like if, you know, Oladipo played 39 minutes last night and that you can't do that for 50 more games because he'll just run him out basically.
Yeah. And GR3 is supposedly the answer, but say he's not the same player, which by the way, he got us some shots today. So we can talk about that on Sunday too. But it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that especially for the next month without GR3. It should be, you know, late December, early January, but that is a good one too. And that kind of bleeds in perfectly to our next question.
Yeah. So what's one move Pacers can make? So this is kind of based on shout out to John, from what's his last name?
Filet from Nouveau.
Is that his last name? I thought it was like LaFoy.
Or LaFoyer or something like that.
Yeah, it's LaFoyer, but he goes by John Filet on Twitter. He wrote a great article for Nouveau about kind of the two moves Pacers could make with Justice Winslow and Brandon Ingram to improve their roster. I don't know if I agreed with them, but that's not – it was a really good article. I enjoyed reading it. So what's one move you think they can make to improve this roster?
A 3-and-D guy in the mold of Robinson would make the most sense right now. But when Robinson comes back, maybe a little more competent – 2-guard play off the bench, sorry Lance, or not terrible rebounding big to play a little bit when you don't want to play or when Sabonis is in foul trouble. But the trouble is, you know, you can't move any of the 8 rotation guys now who are playing besides maybe Collison, which is still really tough if you want to keep winning. And they can't trade their second round pick unless they put weird protections on it because of that Thad Young trade. And I don't advise trading their first round pick when they're not they're not even guaranteed to win a round in the playoffs. So it's really hard to formulate a trade for them that isn't just they weirdly protect a second round pick and get like a crappy expiring guy.
Yeah, you don't want to give up that first round pick because they'll probably be in the top 20. I would guess between 15. I mean, somewhere between 12 and 18 would be my guess right now.
That's also my guess.
Which with the Pacers' history of drafting and Larry Bird, who is not the GM but is still advising, you know, he's been really good at hitting him. Like he hit Turner 11. Granger at 17, I think. You know, they have his history of Paul George at 10 of hitting guys late in the like mid first round pick. So I don't think you want to give up that first round pick. My one roster move is once Robinson comes back, I think they need to send TJ Leaf down to the D League because I think he needs to get some improvement playing more minutes because I think he's proven he's a decent offensive player. Like he can play offense in the NBA, but needs to get strong and work on his D. And the best place to do as a D League, you know, he might not be playing at the top level like he would be in the NBA, but if he can get like 30 minutes a night just playing, telling him to play hard D, that'll help improve his game, which will help Pacers long term at least, because he's probably going to be their backup power forward next year, 2 years, depending on when Thad finally leaves, because he's an option for next year. So you got to be kind of looking towards that kind of move eventually.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. I had not considered simple roster moves that don't involve trades. I was only thinking that. But they also have an open roster spot, remember. So they could still – perfect timing because there were two – moves in the NBA that they could use that roster spot to claim like Derrick Jones Jr. or they could claim Sean Kilpatrick, who the Nets just waived, who both of those guys are young wings with some potential who could end up being good, but I doubt it. So we'll have to see though. Those guys could fit in nicely.
Yeah. And the thing with trades is they don't really have the ability to make a trade that doesn't get rid of some other player they have currently, unless they want to get rid of their first round pick, but you would only do that if you think you have a guy long-term or going for a certain playoff run. So I just don't see them making like an actual like huge addition move.
It would have to be Corey Joseph or Darren Collison sent out, right? Because everyone else is either too important for the future or too important to winning this year. And like those two guys could in theory replace each other's minutes, but I don't know. I can't even think of anything.
Yeah, but then you have to get another guard in return. So yeah, like,
no, you don't have, because the open roster spot, you don't like have to like,
no, but I mean, just to play the actual minutes, you need another guard.
Signed Aaron Williams or something.
No, I think right now the way they're playing, you just leave the roster, see what it ends up at the end of the season, and figure out in the offseason. You know,
oh, I totally agree.
We're gonna talk about this later when the trade down stuff. We talked about it at the basketball game we went to, the Toronto game, where like just in the offseason, figure out what you want to do next. You know, you don't have to bring back Bogdanović. You don't have to bring back Collins necessarily. You know, maybe they should based on how the year ends, but you don't have to worry about that now. Make that move later on when you, after the playoffs, after you've made some kind of run. Because if this team wins, this team is probably on pace to win 40, somewhere between 42 and 45 games, which is really impressive considering they lost their best player and they're going to have the same amount of wins almost.
Yeah, that is impressive. I think if they get offered a first-round pick for any of the Bogdanović, Collison, Young, Joseph Quadrio, that's not a word, one of those four guys, I think they should take it, unless they're like for sure going to be a top four seed, and I don't foresee that happening.
Yeah, only thing is I think if it's not a high enough first-round pick, it's not worth it. Like what's, you know, if, let's say the Rockets come in and want to take somebody like Bogdanović would fit well at the Rockets probably, but like they're going to pick 30. Like that's not really worth it because the 30th pick never really – I mean, I know Kuzma's having a good year for the Lakers, but like how often does a late 25, 30 pick turn into anything? Like I think it has to be a top 20 pick really, like that 20 kind of range to even consider trading away one of those guys.
Well, Thad Young was acquired for the 20th pick, and that was probably too much for him. But we will have to see on that. But I don't think they make any trades for any of the reasons that we just said.
Same. I'm with you on that one. So then my next question, I didn't really give it to you. I sort of teased it as a Victor Oladipo. But did the Pacers win the trade, Tony? They win the Paul George trade?
They got even value in the Paul George trade, which is way better than I thought. I guess that could have been my wrong thing from earlier.
So is that winning not because they actually won in value-wise, but because the position they were put in with the way he wanted to leave, they were basically selling him for pennies on the dollar, and they got whatever more back than the 10 cents they thought they got from the start?
Yeah, they won compared to expectations. They lost because they traded away Paul George. So that's why I call it even, is I factor in what you just said. But yes, it has been way better than I thought it would be. So I will give Kevin Pritchard a ton of credit for that. I mean, I think my initial trade grade was like a C, and now I'd probably go like B, B plus.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would agree. Especially, I also think Pritchard did a great job building around the players he has. Like he made the trade and then added the right guys to fit around those players. So, you could say, you know, Victor Oladipo is better than Paul George, but Paul George is a top 15 player no matter what. But just the Pacers won the trade in the sense that their GM looks really competent. You know, we forget that Bird was an okay GM, drafting-wise really great, but everything else he was kind of iffy at. But Pritchard looks like the kind of GM who really can make the right moves. He understands the roster, how to make the moves. He's got Larry Bird advising him on draft picks, so that kind of picks up that part too. So that's how they won the trade. Pritchard looks
hopefully
nice.
Hopefully they work together on those two departments going forward. That would be perfect.
Yeah, I wonder too if Pritchard might win Executive of the Year at this point. You know,
no.
Who's gonna win it?
No, Daryl Morey, 100%, or Danny.
Yeah. See, but Ainge has won it before, right? So sometimes they go with like Pritchard's never won it. That's the only reason I would say he might win it. I'm sure Morey and I'm sure Ainge has won it before.
In our, I can't tease it. There's an article coming out where I have a vote in this process, but Kevin Pritchard is in the top 7, I think, of this article that is coming out. But I think Ainge and Morey and Stan Van Gundy and Presti are the four that are dominating.
Yeah, but Presti, I don't know. We'll see how that team is.
Well, even if you say they tie the Paul George trade, they clearly won the Melo trade. They got Patrick Patterson and Raymond Felton for nothing. Like, they did pretty well.
I don't know. But, like, if they don't win, if they only win 40 games, both guys leaving the end of the season, it doesn't really matter.
No, they're not going to win 40 games.
Well, they win 45, let's put it that way. I think that's what they're...
We'll see.
They traded away guys, and they didn't improve on wins, so I don't know if that really...
Westbrook is way worse, but we are way off topic.
Yeah, so I think Pritchard at least needs to be in the conversation, let's put it that way. But, yes. And then to our final question, we have to do predictions here. We do it all the time. So we're 25 games in there, 14-11. At the 42-game mark, what's going to be their record?
The 41-game mark is
41-game mark. We determined this a while ago.
23-18 is what I'll go with.
All right, that's a good number. I had 24 wins. I don't 24, 25 wins, whatever that is in losses. And so that's 16 or 17 losses, right?
Yeah, I think that's solid. And they have a tougher second half schedule than first half with their road trip. So hopefully they can have a nice 3 or 4 game buffer.
Yeah, and if they're at 24 wins, it means they only have to go the reverse of that, like 17 and 24 second half to actually be a 500 team, which would be a huge success.
That would be great. Yes, a 500 would be far above my expectations, so that would be awesome.
Yeah, we should have put some money down on the over. We blew that one. 20.5. They're definitely getting more than 20.5 wins, whatever it was, right?
I thought it was 30.5, but
no, it was 30.5. It was 30.5.
But we still should have gone with the over. But we are going long, and we have two game previews today.
Yeah, so we're gonna do next thing we're gonna do, because we didn't do it on Monday, is we're gonna do preview the Cavs and Nuggets game. All right, welcome back into the Locked On Pacers podcast. So we're gonna preview the Cavs game, which is this Friday today. You'll see the podcast on Friday. It'll be tonight, and the Nuggets game on Sunday. So the Cavs come in with, what, a 14-game win streak, Tony?
13.
13. So the Pacers narrowly avoided the Boston Celtics coming with an 18-game win streak. So now they get a real win streak with the Cavs. They beat the Cavs the first time, 124-107, in a weird game where the Cavs, you know, struggled really early on in the season, so they kind of blew them out in the fourth quarter, ran away with it. LeBron is obviously playing out of his mind. LeBron is probably the one or two in the MVP vote right now. He, for the season, let's put it this way, he's averaging 28 points, 8 assists, 8 rebounds on 43% shooting from 3, which would be a career high for him. He is not quite in the 50-40-90 club because his free throw percentage is not that high, but he is awesome. And so, obviously, he's going to be the difference in this game. But what else about the Cavs do you like when they play the Pacers?
They have a lot of differences from the first game, which is going to be super weird. Like, Derrick Rose played 28 minutes and played really well. He had 19 points. It might have been his best game of the year. And he will not be playing for injuries. Tristan Thompson started in this game. He has not been playing a lot recently. I think he's questionable for this game. It says he's unknown if he'll return to action against the Pacers on Friday. I'm pretty sure Iman Shumpert played in this game. I might be wrong about that. No, he did not. Never mind. But, you know, there's a lot of changes on the roster. Their starting lineup is different now. Channing Frye gets to play now. Jake Crowder starts. Like, they're very different, and their defense is significantly better now without Rose, which is sad to say. So, yeah, they're really good, but the Pacers have already beaten them. So, hopefully, they can pull it off again.
Yeah, so I don't know if you listened to – it was either on Zach Lowe's podcast or Bill Simmons where they talked about how the Cavs are playing these old man lineups with Kyle Korver, Dwayne Wade on the floor, and then they put James up there, and it's like the number one lineup for them. It's like a ridiculous plus-minus on the floor. So, you know, they switched Kevin Love to the center, so that's going to be – actually won't be that bad for the Pacers because the Pacers already play kind of small. But LeBron's going to – I don't know who guards LeBron, how they guard LeBron. I guess Thad Young might guard LeBron, what it seems like. You know, I don't really know how they do it.
They didn't in the first one. He had 33 points, so.
Which maybe you don't have to guard LeBron. I mean, not that, you know what I mean? You let him get his. I mean, he's going to get between 25 and 35 points every night, it seems like. So let him get his and stop everybody else, right? Stop. Don't let Korver get open threes and don't let, you know, that's what usually kills him is Korver or JR streaks and get some kind of hot streak, and that's how they kill him. Because if you let LeBron and those guys, if you let the other guys kill you, you're going to lose. But if you let LeBron kill you, you might have a shot at winning at least.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do to stop this team. They've just been wrecking people recently. They're up all the way up to fourth in offense after really struggling to start the year. So I am fearful for how well they will score in this game.
Yeah, I think the only way the Pacers win is if they just shoot like a ridiculous percentage. I mean, they have to just come out and outscore them and just run them up. You know what I mean? They're going to go the same pace. I mean, the Pacers have scored a lot of points on Cavs teams before. They scored 74 points in a first half of a playoff game last year that we all hated the second half for. But they've done this before, so they just got to score a lot of points. Well, and
remember in that first game, they shot 62% from three, the Pacers did. Like, it was unbelievable. Darren Collison had 25 points on 9 of 10 shooting. You know, they were shooting their way through the – remember that was a huge Thad Young game, too. He had 26. Like, they're not going to shoot that well from three again, so they're going to have to defend a little better in this one.
I do only wonder, so I don't know if he'll do that. Nate Millen would do this, but do you think Lance Stephenson guards LeBron at all? Because I don't know if you want to do that. I think you'd rather not piss off LeBron, because when you piss off LeBron, he beats you. But if you don't piss him off, he doesn't always beat you because he's not always like focused and 100% caring.
I hope they do not do that. I hope they put Victor Oladipo on LeBron James.
That's going to be tough because you want Oladipo to – I mean, you need Oladipo to score 30 points to win this game probably.
I don't know what they're going to do. LeBron is too hard to game plan for.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's – it's.
He is my butcher, even though you're going to say I'm not allowed to pick him.
So let's do X Factor first. So who's your Pacers X Factor? I've teased a couple players for myself, but who's your
Collison player? Collison was the key in that first game, but also we have to talk about how Sabonis started in that first one, but I guess I just said all I needed to say. He started, had 15 points and 12 rebounds. He was awesome, but Sorry, that was a disgross burp, but I'm going to go with Corey Joseph here. Like you just talked about, they have that great second unit with Dwayne Wade and Kyle Korver, and J.R. Smith plays with some bench units sometimes. They just have really good reserve guards, and Corey Joseph's defense is going to be integral on those guys since they're so good at shooting and creating.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I'm actually going to pick Miles Turner.
Okay, good pick.
I'm going to only pick him because he's going to be – it's going to be his job to out-rebound Kevin Love, which they might have a shot at winning
LOL. The rebounding –
about trying to win the rebound battle. They might not. I mean, he has a height advantage. I know Kevin Love is one of the better rebounds in the NBA, which still you cannot figure out how, but he is. But he's got to try to win that battle because if they don't win that battle, they're not going to win the game. But also on the offensive end, he's going to have some opportunities because Kevin Love is not a great defender on the outside if you take him out from under the hoop and just kind of, I mean, he's not a good defender in general, but Turner will have a chance to try to score on him. And if Turner can put up like 25 points on some ridiculous shooting numbers, like 8 of 10 or 10 of 13 or whatever, that could be kind of the X factor in the game.
Yeah, definitely. I think him and Kevin Love are pretty similar players with their stretch ability, but they can't really guard in the perimeter. So we'll see. I think they'll be pretty fairly matched against each other.
Yeah, I would agree. I think Kevin Love in his prime is better than Miles Turner, but Kevin Love is not quite in his prime anymore. So who's then non-LeBron Butcher?
J.R. Smith usually has good games against them, and you called that the first time. I'll just go with Love because I think he's going to get a stupid amount of rebounds, and it's going to deflate this team so much.
Yeah, you saw it against the Bulls game where they were so bad at boxing out, and on so many times either the Bulls got a second chance play or I can't count the amount of times the ball bounced into Markkanen's hand right in front of the rim and he put a layup.
And like boxing out's a thing that you don't appreciate when you're watching a game unless it's just awful, and it was awful in that game.
I honestly think they were overlooking the Bulls. I think they were ready for the Cavs and they overlooked the Bulls, and somehow Victor Oladipo was just like, you know what, guys, let's win this game, and he won it for them. But Butcher is going to be Kyle Korver. He is deadly. I mean, if you let him make 1-3 and then he hits like he'll hit 5 more, and it's just by all of a sudden, like I watched them play the Knicks a couple weeks ago. And the Knicks were up like 20. The same way Page were up on the Knicks by 20. All of a sudden, Kyle Korver hit 1-3, and then he hit like 5 in a row. And all of a sudden, the game, a 20-point Knicks lead, the Cavs up 5. Like, Kyle Korver is one of those players, when you watch him, it's like you don't appreciate just how hot he gets. Like, he is the definition of just a guy that's on a heat check and will keep making him. Better than J.R. Smith, in my opinion.
Oh, definitely. Well, he's just more consistently better than JR, but his picks are scarier.
Yes.
Yeah. But you want to go first on score, or you want me to go first?
I can go first on score because you went first, I think, on the last couple games we did the first podcast. I'm going to pick a – oh, man.
This is a hard one. This is a really hard one.
I'm going to pick a Cavs win 115-108.
So – I actually have a comparison for this game because last year I went to the Cavs game. It was the only Pacers game I've ever attended that the Pacers lost. And they were winning by 15 in the third quarter, and then LeBron smoked them in the fourth. It was a regular season game, and they lost. And I think that's kind of what's going to happen again. And I'm going to go with a 112-102 Cavaliers win.
So LeBron actually played in a game in Indianapolis? I feel like he hasn't played in Indianapolis in like 7 years, it seems like. They always play some back-to-backs, and LeBron never plays.
No.
Well, he plays sometimes. He seems very – like he always misses the Pacers game a lot of times.
I was minus 10, and you were minus 7.
Yeah.
We are very close, at 1 point apart in our predictions for scores this week. We'll have to be mindful of that going into the Nuggets game.
So am I one under you or one above you?
I am at plus 37. You're at plus 36.
All right. I have to just stay under. Okay. The next game the Pacers play, Sunday, early game, 5 o'clock game. So you can watch it right after. I don't know when the Colts play because I stopped caring about the Colts, but you can watch that at the Colts game because it'll be more fun. But the Nuggets will be without Paul Millsap, without Nikola
and Jokic, which means they are not a good front court at all.
Yeah, they have lost. When did Jokic get hurt? Last against the Lakers, so they've lost both games since then.
Yes, and now they're starting Mason Plumlee and Kenneth Faried in the post.
Yeah, so the Pacers kind of caught a break here because the Nuggets are probably a top six team in the West. They're definitely one of the better teams in the NBA, but they caught a break this time, drawing. You know, they're missing their number one, number two player. So we get to see some of that Gary Harris Oladipo matchup that you think Gary Harris is so great from.
He is.
I don't know, but he's not like better than Oladipo great. I think he's
Gary Harris is so great.
Well, Gary Harris is a former Indianapolis native, probably more like Carmel, but they all say from Indianapolis.
Fishers. Anyways. Fishers is.
But you all say from Indianapolis. People who live outside Indianapolis just say they live in Indianapolis. They live in that kind of area. But
Two Indy natives on this team with Gary Harris and Trey Lyles. Gotta love it.
Oh, I forgot Trey Lyles is on their roster.
Yeah.
He's a real Indianapolis kid, Arsenal Tech kid.
And a Syracuse guy, Tyler Lydon.
Yes, but I think Lydon, is Lydon actually playing for them or has he been in the D-League?
2 minutes this season.
Right, so he's basically been in the D-League, I think. And then, I mean, on the Pacers, obviously, you've got, well, I guess you have Oladipo, who's not really an Indiana, went to IU, but not an Indiana guy. So,
interesting
to see.
He's the only one. Anyway, yes, Gary Harris is very good at his role. He is shooting 41% from three and is an awesome player this year. But anyway, this game's going to be weird because of that front court problems for the Nuggets. Kenneth Faried, former Team USA guy who's really fallen off because his skill set just isn't modern anymore. He's a really, really, really tenacious rebounder. I'm assuming that he leads the team in rebounds per game of healthy players. That is correct for post players, that is. And then Mason Plumlee is – I love Mason Plumlee. He's a really good passer and can kind of score from the mid-range. But, you know, he's just not nearly as good as Nikola Jokic. So really big opportunity for – Sabonis, Young, and Miles. And Sabonis especially because, you know, when your starters get hurt, your backups obviously get to be in the light. But now, because of it, like Trey Lyles gets to play more. And even Juan Hernan Gomez. And Sabonis can just dominate those guys in the post. So, could be a big game for him. And I would pick him as my X Factor when that comes up.
Yeah, between Jokic and Millsap, the Nuggets are missing 31 points a game and 16 rebounds. So, that's hard to – it's hard to replace – Nuggets interesting are actually have when they're all healthy have six guys averaging 10 or more points a game, which is interesting because not a lot of teams have that much distribution. They have all most of their guys are all they're all their starters are between 14 and 15 points a game, like straight even. So that's interesting, just like the distribution of this team, how they're pretty selfless. But you know, I think it's this game falls probably on Gary Harris, right? He's probably their best player right now, right?
Will Barton's been killing it this year, so but he's a sixth man. Their starting lineup, their backcourt is young but good between Murray and Harris. Yeah, probably Gary Harris is their best player. He just doesn't really create offense. It's more Murray creating the offense. And with Wilson Chandler out too, that means Juancho is going to start. You know, he'll have to create a little bit too. But they're missing a lot of talented players.
So you said your X Factor was Sabonis.
I did. And I am sticking with that.
That's a good X Factor. My X Factor, I think, is going to be Victor Oladipo. I think he... going to look across at the Gary Harris and say, I'm better than this guy. I'm going to prove I'm better than this guy. And he's going to drop 30 points at least.
That'd be great. And then you can rub it in my face. Well, also, Sabonis. The Nuggets are second in the league in offensive rebounds. And again, Jokic and Millsap are out. But, you know, Kenneth Faried is an amazing offensive rebounder. So Sabonis, it's very, very crucial that you box out Kenneth Faried.
Yes. We got to win the rebound battle. And I think they will because the bench will run up. This is a game where the bench could run up the score for them. Instead of the starters taking it like a full runaway, maybe they get a lead and the bench kind of piles on.
Yes, that would be great.
It's really interesting, though, that they drew an injured Knicks team on Monday and the Nuggets now on Sunday injured. It's just it's good to catch some of these breaks because it's some easy wins that you can pile on to get to that 45 win number. That's would be kind of cool.
Yeah, this is one that they could definitely use. They have to take advantage of these injured teams. But who is your butcher on this crippled Nuggets team?
Well, I still think Gary Harris might be the butcher. He's the best player on the roster. Just because he's the best player. the best player left. I mean, come on. The best players are hurt. But, I mean, butcher might mean 18 points. This team is the most evenly distributed offensive team. I mean, 18 points might be the butcher.
Yeah, I'm picking Will Barton. Will Barton is nasty off the bench. 16 points. He's shooting 42% from three. He's playing a lot of minutes now because of all these injuries. But, you know, he can really score. He can really create. He had that buzzer beater against the Bulls, ironically, just like the Pacers just did not too long ago. So watch out for Will Barton when he's on the bench.
Is he not starting now that all the guys got hurt?
I'm pretty confident, actually, that their starting lineup in their last game was Murray, Harris, Juancho, Hernan Gomez, Faried, and Plumlee.
I don't know. When ESPN has the five that started, right? So it had Faried, Chandler, Murray, Barton, Harris.
Okay.
But that might have been their ending lineup. But they, because well,
well, I didn't know Chandler was back, too. That changes everything.
Yeah. So You know, Gary Harris played 37 minutes in the last game. The Nuggets, I'm trying to think, I'm going to look at the Nuggets schedule, see if they have a back-to-back, because if
they don't. They're Friday in Orlando.
So that would be rough to make them play out an early Sunday game on a back-to-back. That's just that'd be mean. But it is a road trip for them, right?
Yeah, they're 4-6 nights. They just played at Dallas and then at New Orleans, now at Orlando, at Indy, at Detroit, at Boston, back-to-back. Tough stretch for the Denver.
Yeah, they're on a six-game road trip for the Pacers. Reverse or a six-game homestand, so.
Yep.
Which is beneficial to them.
I'll go first here. Score prediction. I like the Pacers in this one for the injury reasons that we have just said. They just ran over the injured and tired New York Knicks. So I don't know, because we didn't say they're whatever tangibles. They are 6th in offense and 24th in defense. So they are literally the same as the Pacers almost, and 13th in pace. So I think it's going to be a higher scoring game. I'm going to go 110-107 Indiana Pacers.
Ooh, that's a close one. I was going 120-111.
And you jumped right over me in the score.
I know. I realize that. I'm hoping that they're going to have to blow out. I think the question will be how close the Cavs game is.
I agree.
Because I think they were winning the game by 10. You went really low. 3 points. I think they won by 10. So
Gary Harris back home. Resurgent game, baby.
I think Oladipo's going to have a nice night. I think he's going to have a lot of nice nights.
You want Oladipo to have a nice night so bad.
Oh, Oladipo can consistently – I don't want him to. He consistently has nice nights if you watch.
He does. He does.
Every night it's – you know, occasionally he has the Knicks game where he doesn't need to put up 20 points, but most time it's 27, 28, 30, 29. You know, he's been awesome this year. And you're ready for him to regress, and I'm not, because I like watching him play, and he's – one of the most exciting players right now to watch, because he is.
I don't want him to regress.
He's a pull-up machine. He's a pull-up. He's a three-point pull-up machine. I mean, you know, sometimes it'll look bad, but it goes in way more than you think it should.
Yeah, he should put one of those bars above his door, because he's really good at pull-ups.
Yeah. can we just do? You did the podcast yesterday, but I never got to do it. That three at the end of the Bulls game was amazing.
Oh, snake dribbles at half court, bursts through two defenders, pulls up with two guys dropping to the rim. My city celebration. That was awesome. That was sensational.
I just can't believe it. I mean, like, how many players have enough guts to take that as a three-point shot? I mean, it's just, that's what I mean. It's like, he had an easy layup. Maybe not an easy layup, but he had a way to get to the rim. I mean, he was ahead of everybody. He's so good at snaking through, and even if it was like a two-on-one, whatever it was, he got to the rim and easily tied the game up, but he decided he wanted to win it, and man,
and I didn't talk about this yesterday, but how smart to shoot with 30 seconds left, because then if you miss, you don't have to foul.
Yeah, I don't think he did it on purpose. I think that was just the shot he had. I almost
certainly did it on purpose, because
you think he did? I think he just oh, I'm open, I'm gonna shoot this three, because I've been doing that all season.
I'm glad he made it. It was a sick shot.
Yeah, if we missed that, think how pissed we would be today.
I said it on the pod yesterday, but I did text you that they were gonna win.
What? Oh, yeah, we were talking to the game. Yes, I was like, I kept thinking they were going to win, and then every time, every little break went the wrong way for them, for like an entire, like every little rebound went the wrong way, every little step out of bounds, missed open three, everything was going the wrong way to the last like 6 minutes, then all of a sudden everything turned around.
Yeah, the high pick and roll with Turner and Oladipo was cooking, but we already reviewed that game. We can talk about it on Sunday when we do a little weekly recap and stuff.
Yes, we can.
Anything else? Good week recap. We have a lot to talk about.
Anything else you want to talk about before we go?
Just keep an eye out on the minute distribution between Joseph and Collison going forward. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you to Indiana Sports Coverage, who we're partnering with and has been helping us grow our base of view of listeners. Anything else we need to, anybody else who supports us we need to reach out to?
Everyone who listens. Thank you.
Yep, exactly. Thank you, everybody, listening to this podcast. Like always, you can reach us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. You can get Tony at TeasedNBA or me at FriedmanAdam5. You can email the show at LockedOnPacers@gmail.com. Leave comments on our iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen to the podcast page. Please do. We love to hear feedback, how to make the show better for you. That's it for today's podcast. Enjoy tonight's Pacer game, and have a good rest of your day.